بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم، نحمد ونصلي على رسول الكريم. الحمد لله، praise Allah سبحانه وتعالى، ask him send peace and blessing his beloved and our beloved Sayyidina Muhammad صلى الله عليه وسلم. So this is session number six. This will be a bit shorter than the rest. And we'll just continue from where we left off last week. So we were talking about the current era of fiqh. So the development and history of fiqh. So obviously printing presses, the printing press itself, and then beyond that, the availability of books, voluminous large works, fatawa works, encyclopedias, compendiums, it just became very much more readily, easily, available to everybody. It's very important for the student to be able to discern because there's so much resource available, and on online it's even expanded even more. So you're able to get so much more resources that maybe a talib al-ilm or an alim in the past would have difficulty locating. But what can happen is people may misunderstand what a book is written for. So along with, as an advice to students of knowledge, Sheikh Amir in the Arabic of this course advised that first you should understand. So, for example, you're going to look at a fiqh book. In the fiqh genre, there are sub-genres. So there might be like a book like Insaf in the Hanbali fiqh, for example. It's a book not on dalils, like the sources. They are discussed, but that's not the purpose of the book. The purpose of the book is a very large book. It fills up a whole bookshelf. That book is more to do with the narrations or from Imam Ahmad rahimullah and the madhab before it. So it's more the internal school narrations, right? Even though dalils are discussed, ayat and hadith maybe, but that's not the point of it. Hence, it'll be deficient in that aspect. If you want to get book on like all the narrations, then you'll have to go, or you want to get a book on comparative fiqh, then you might have to go to Al-Awsat ibn of Munzir, right? And this is a great book. And Sheikh Amr kept on saying that this book is good for a student and this is a great book. Yeah, but it might not be great. It might be great for comparative fiqh. Insaf might be great for, in the Hanbali fiqh, for example, might be great for referencing, referencing a view in the madhab and the ins and outs of the madhab. But they might, none of them might be good as a syllabus book, right? A class book, a textbook. So similarly in tafsir, you wouldn't start your tafsir with Tafsir ibn Jarir. Another book that's very important, especially for the Hanbali as well, Wazir ibn Hubayra al-Hanbali rahmullah, his book on where the imams, like it's comparative fiqh, but then he also concludes where are points of agreement and disagreement in issue. Another one, Bidayat al-Mujtahid, is very well known in Saudi Arabia. They teach it in, there's a book that is used as a syllabus book to teach comparative fiqh, and this is written by Ibn Rushd, the grandson, rahmullah. And he, in a very beautiful way, in the most concise way, talks to you about the suburb of the differences, where the imams are different, what are the reasons of the differences, right? Al-Mughni of Ibn Qudama, this is probably the most read book by non-Hanbalis. It'll be the first thing that a non-Hanbali probably reference when you talk about the Hanbali madhab, this first stop shop for the views of the madhab. But of course, they should know that somebody asked the masala yesterday regarding the Hanbali madhab, and I had to explain to them that, and it, quoting Ibn Qudama, said, yeah, that's not really a fatwa book of the madhab. It is a major reference. It is a very useful book, beneficial book, and it is used in writing and developing fatwas. So, but it's not the mutakhirin, like, and the current scholars, they don't use that as a starting point, right? There are other, and then there's another book of comparative fiqh, like Sharh al-Kabir of Ibn Abi Umar, rahmullah. There are other books, genres within, sub-genres within fiqh. So like, for example, books on a hadith, like Umd al-Ahkam and its commentaries on hadith, ahkam of hadith, right? Or for example, like Ayat of Ahkam, Ahkam al-Quran. These are books that serve fiqh, right? Even though they are talking about ayat al-Quran or hadith, but they're serving fiqh because they're talking about ahkam, and that's what fiqh is related to. In the present age, something else, a new contribution that is made to fiqh. Because we're talking about the development and the history of fiqh, right? So in the current, in the contemporary era, the last 100 years, and even much more recently than that, one of the great encyclopedias that's been created. So you're talking about a massive work, the Kuwaiti Fiqh Encyclopedia, Mawsu' al-Fiqhiyya al-Kuwaitiyya. This is, it's not perfect. There are issues with it, but this is like basically goes and tries to get all the views of all the madahib, and like, and in a very different structure. All the other comparative fiqh books, the classic ones, they do according to the chapters of fiqh. So you'll have like Taharat and Salat and so forth. Generally, a fiqh book that you can recognize the topics, and you know, subtopics accordingly. However, this book is more written on sort of like a modern perspective, like an encyclopedia, in alphabetical order. I mean, for those who are maybe too young to remember what a Britannica was, what a encyclopedia that actually used to sit on the bookshelf, a large encyclopedia. But yeah, it's written in that style. So it's written in an alphabetical order. So you wouldn't find all the things of one topic in one volume, but they'll be scattered based on the reference and referencing given the word that is keyword for that thing. So that's like a new, like development, a recent development. Secondly, the electronic, the fiqh collection that's online, that's another work that's given there. You wouldn't take another madhab. You have to, as a student of knowledge, you have to be careful with these encyclopedias, even classic books of comparative fiqh. You would want you don't want to be deciding on a madhab from these books. And I found that even when I was studying with Hanafi muftis in Hanafi madrasa as a Hanbali, and this is the same thing with Shafi's experience as well, and Hanafis with the others, a perception, a view is within a madhab. The other madhab adopts that view as a, and they counter that view, even though that's not the mainstream view and the accepted mu'tamad of that other madhab. And they're refuting it and said, they're arguing and said, this is what the imam said, and this is, and they're refuting, but it's not actually. And there's many, many cases of that, in very big and reliable books, because they're talking about another school, right? And they might not have actually picked on the final position of the school which they're refuting. So furthermore, in the current era, other books that have been written, so this comes at the idea of printing books and encyclopedias, which have become more common. There's certain books, encyclopedia, you can call it a compendium, not an encyclopedia, but in a compendium on a specific chapter. So it tries to cover all the views of all the madahib, all the discussions, ins and outs, in its entirety, like for example, to do with purification or salat. So Sheikh Dubayan, he wrote a book on Tahara and Muamalat as well, which wasn't complete. Another alim completed it. But these are not class books, they're not textbooks, they are references, right? You can't really read them. You have to, you have the ulama have them, have access to them, and they're a resource to use when they're doing research and so forth. However, as I said before, you wouldn't base a ruling from these, like for example, in fatwa writing or in research, you would have to go to the books of the madhab and the ulama of the madhab. There are another genre of books that has recently occurred, and this is sort of like a continuation of a tradition that's always there, but there's a specific focus. It's called Nawazil. Nawazil refers to new issues. So there's some books that are totally focused, some new books, commentaries that will try to reference new masail. So an example of that is Mufti Taqi Usmani's Kitab al-Buyu', book on transactions. So what he's tried to do is bring the classical fiqh, the madahib, and also modern finance. So the modern transactions that are occurring and how to you know, in modern issues. There are some books specifically. My teacher, Sheikh Faris, he wrote this book, right? This is his book on Nawazil, modern issue. It's divided according to the chapters of fiqh, right? The classical chapters of Tahara, Salat, and there's new masail, like, you know, like dry cleaning or, you know, I can just read some, you know, cash money. There's a zakat on cash, right? Because classically, zakat was on gold and silver. Does this take the place of gold and silver money in the modern age? Which majority say, you know, pretty much everybody says it does, but there's a discussion around it, right? Because everything that happens and everything that we have to do And every new situation that occurs has to be an answer for it, and those answers are there. So, and there's a book of Hajj as well. So there's a Mansukh ibn Ijazah, which is the in the Hanbali. It's in a very thick volume. Mansukh ibn Jama'at is form. It's for the four madhahib comparison in the madhab. The Sheikh, I think, Sheikh Nuruddin Itar's book as well on Hajj of the four madhahib comparison as well. He's a Shafi'i alim, as far as I remember. So it's very important that for students that have access to this, like researchers, that they don't go by this. They also have to go through a methodology. So although you will not put this do put this akin to you will not put this akin to Wikipedia, but it wouldn't be a rigorously academic if you were to just reference these works, right? You'll have to go to the actual books of the school. Another development that came in the recent era is the development of fiqh councils, Sharia councils, like in a, I'm talking about a major Sharia councils, like big ones, academic bodies like the Fiqh Academy in Jeddah and the Muslim World League in Rabit Al-Alam Islami, which is in Makkah Mukarramah. Someone my father worked for most of his life, I guess you could say maybe 40 years, 30, 40 years he worked for them. So these two are the two, what separates these academies or these institutions is they are international level and scholars from all over the world. Rabit Al-Alam Leslie Fiqh Academy Jeddah is the main one that all the senior ulama of the world, they're all tied into this organization and they have long discussions and they bring in specialists, economists and lawyers and doctors and legal special, modern legal special. I mean, just it's a very thorough, you can almost, they're doing collective ijtihad, which is like the best way to do it. Where they and there's there's views and counter views and detractors. We might not agree with the views and say, or some that might remain quiet on the issue, some that will have an opposing view and they document all of that. So it's a quite a unique sort of development in the sense that and this is like on an international level. However, having said that, there are of course within universities, Darul Ulooms, Darul Tahqiqs, like the way they do research. There are national bodies in many countries, Muslim governments, obviously, sometimes in minority countries as well. There are institutions that do research and contribute as well. But when it comes to the international level scholarship, Fiqh Academy of Jeddah is pretty much the king in all of these matters. And they produce voluminous journals with all these research in it. There's also a journal in Saudi Arabia, for example. Sheikh Ahmed is in Saudi Arabia, so I speak from their perspective. But the same thing will go for any other country. They're all beneficial. It's good for the student to read these. But this is not where you start off. This is more when a Talib al-Ilm, seeker of knowledge, has grounded himself in all the sciences, several years of study. Then when he comes to a point of research, then he can. There are some websites that are very useful as well. Official government websites with proper researchers. What Islam QA is a very famous one. Islam Web from Qatar is well known as well. Very useful. Might not be Muslim specific sometimes, but useful for the alim anyway, for the student seeker of knowledge. Another person, another website, like for example, for different Darul Ulooms, they have their websites as well, fatwa websites, and hence people can. They're not research based, but they are fiqh based, and they're answering people's questions and so forth. And there's like articles and research there as well. The next development is the creation of fiqh journals, which I just mentioned, fiqh websites, call for reforms of usul fiqh. We'll come back to this in a moment. The occurrence of excessive new situations. So this is the nawazil, which I was mentioned, new occurrences in the modern era that the world is transformed due to the Industrial Revolution. Then has transformed the world beyond recognition. So that has brought in every chapter of fiqh and every masala is almost like a new masala that has to be discussed because so many changes have occurred. Right. The next discussion you could say is regarding the usul al-fiqh and the call for reform of usul al-fiqh. Right. So in today's age, there's almost a, in certain quarters, certain groups and certain individuals have promoted a doing away, renewing. Some absolutely tearing it up and just say we're starting from scratch. Others are saying no, they don't have an issue with it, but they want it adjusted and changed. This is very different to what we might understand as an alim contributing to the field academically and so forth. This is not a, this is not that. This is about changing it entirely, right? In the light of our times, right? Unfortunately, this will not work. Alhamdulillah, Allah has preserved this deen. And these calls are coming from within ours. They're not coming from kuffar, they're coming from the Muslims. But they're coming from Muslims who are very, very affected by the world. And I'm not talking about people dealing with the reality world, because that's something the ulama do anyway, right? Like, can you do, how do you pray? Do you pray on an airplane or not? Do you, what's the dua for safar for airplane? You know, like, is dry cleaning, can, all these questions are answered in Darul Iftars. You go to Jordan, you go to Morocco, you go to Pakistan, you go to Indonesia, you go to the whole east to west, the ulama, the muftis answer all the new issues. If they don't know, they send it to more senior when they do tahqiq research on it, and then they come to an answer. These things are, there's a system already in place for that, and they're based on a sound usul of a given school, and then they try to solve a problem. In when it comes to transactions, yes, there's more leeway given. They might follow the other school because there it does give a flexibility in these things, and ease is also important, because that's some, that's something that is done already. It's already built into our Sharia, it's built into our fiqh, it's built into our madahib. This is a whole, you know, uprooting of the usul of fiqh. They don't say it, they don't word it like that, but this is how the ulama see it. And this change, you know, like the Risala of Imam Shafi is considered the first book, formal book written of in usul of fiqh. This book has a distinct feature that we cannot go past the usul and the principles set by the Salaf, the Khairul Qurun, the best 3 centuries Rasulullah vouched for. And since they, we cannot, so there's a saying, you know, that the fortress is the Quran and Sunnah. The fence or the outer wall is the ijma', consensus. And the door to this, the access to this is usul of fiqh, meaning Islamic legal theory that is established in the schools of, in the madahib. This cannot be renewed, which they claim they're trying to do. What they're doing is that they put maslaha, the needs of the people, to make ease for them, right? So that, you know, we need to find a way out for people. But the problem is this renewal, it is rejected, rightly so, because it's seen by many ulama as this will be a destroyer of the Sharia. This is a internal plot. I mean, it, Sheikh Ramadan Bouti Rahmullah, in his when he did his PhD, it's where he talks about this, and it's specifically this topic. And he goes even further. This is an external idea that's coming to Islam to destroy the Sharia from the inside, the Deen from the inside. So not all, in regards to this renewal, not all reform is calls for reform are not new. Some are outright just they're against the four. We're not talking about new presentation. Like if you put it into a PowerPoint presentation, you make things easy for the student to understand what's there. This is about a total, you know, undoing of it. You know, and these come, they come under different names like liberalism, rationalism, enlightenment. This is like Islamic enlightenment and so forth. But they've actually picked on a very specific branch or an aspect of usul of fiqh. And they've made that the whole thing. So that so they want to deal with maslaha, right? To solve people's issues, right? To block, to find solutions, right? The problem with that is that they put an aspect of deen called maqasid al-sharia, the goals of sharia. Like, you know, what's the goal of sharia? Primary goals is to save life, to save deen, to save mind, hence there's a punishment. All these have a punishment, right? You can't kill anybody. There's a hukum for murtad. So life, wealth. To protect life, protect wealth, protect deen, protect honor, so forth. So these are the maqasid, the goals of the Sharia, the and protect the mind. So these maqasid, these goals of Sharia, Imam Shatibi Rahmullah, he elaborated, but he never wrote a book specifically for this. Actually, he wrote a book on Sharia, then he wrote a book within that as a section of usul, within that as a section of maqasid, the goals of Sharia. So he didn't like make it a, you know, and other ulama have written on the maslaha as well. But the problem is that what the maqasidis, if you can call them that, what they've done is they've separated the teacher to beginners, then make it the sole method of ijtihad, right? And how are they basing what's maslaha, what should be in and out of deen? Whatever is in vogue at that, whatever is in vogue and easy for people. So even though there's a reference, for example, you cannot touch a non-mahram woman with your hand, as an example, they said no, it'll upset her feelings, and then for it'd be permissible to shake her hands. You know, so like this, it's like it really is a very bold and a move. I'm not talking bold in the sense of like praiseworthy. It's a very, very shocking sort of like a move to make on the understandings of the reference of Sharia. The his book, Imam Shatib's book, Muwafaqat, he mentioned that for ijtihad, two things are required: the Arabic language and the maqas, the maqas of the Sharia. Yeah, but when he's talking maqas Sharia, like he's not talking in a very superficial way. He's talking about in sitting within comfortably within usul al-fiqh, right? And so they try to make that, oh, we're doing ijtihad, we're doing personal reasoning based on maqasid, the goals of Sharia, not just the text, right? As though that's a deficient, the classical usul al-fiqh is somehow deficient. That if you're close to understanding Quran Sunnah of the Salaf, which is what usul al-fiqh is based on, then this is something. I mean, when it comes to masalih, solution to people's problems on worldly matters, and they're very focused on this world, that they are the kuffar. Sheikh Ahmed says that the kuffar are better than us on many worldly things. So should they be dictating the Sharia to us because they're very good at masalih of worldly problems? So it's a chapter of a section of a chapter within a topic, and the strange thing is that the people who criticize the mainstream ulama that critique these so-called maqasid, they said they're not even half of Shatibi, right? Because Imam Shatibi wrote another book called I'tisam, and in which he talks about the sunnah, sticking to the sunnah, and the warning of bid'ah. And this is a new type of bid'ah coming through the intellectual circles. Imam Shatibi rahimahullah talks about, he was more focused about akhirah. He said the number one goal of the Sharia is to take the person out of following the desires, right? And he said that whoever that you follow other than the understanding of the Salaf, the early Muslims, then this is absolute misguidance. I mean, even I was Maulana Shafri Tanwi Tafsir, Bayan al-Quran, he had an usul that you can come up with a new understanding as long as it doesn't contradict with the Salaf. He will never write down something that is understanding above the Salaf or as a counter to the Salaf, right? You can't be right, right? So the the problem with the maqasid people is that their whole focus is worldly maqasid, right? They'll say claims like the holiness of the text, like the text of Quran Sunnah, we consider it holy, but freedom of the mind, right? These are slogans, they're slogans. Imam Shatibi himself said, no one's allowed to look into my book of Usul or Furu until he is actually very firm in fiqh and usul, right? So we should study maqasid Sharia, but it's at a different level in your studies. It's more closer to when you get to the research phase and you're very well grounded in usul and qawaid and so forth. Also, Imam Shatibi himself, who's used as the poster child for this, he's used as a poster for this movement. But he would disown this movement based on all the statements ulama have put together of him. He was a Maliki through and through throughout his whole life, right? He praised the Mujtahid Imams, right? And he considered them an authority. The Mujtahid themselves, their schools are an authority. Like Allah says in the Quran, Ati Allah, Ati Rasul Amr, obey Allah and obey his messenger, and those placing authority, meaning the ulama, right? This is one is the rulers and one is the ulama, who are authorities in deen, because we are ordered to follow them, right? So they've taking this exaggerated view and try to make it mainstream, right? And saying that we're going to do this ijtihad from scratch, it won't work. It's too many holes in it already, and they haven't got much to show for it. And it does, unfortunately, what it does, it creates very overconfident young person. I've seen it with my own eyes personally, where they basically are ready to ijtihad when they're like 21, 22. They do a bachelor's in Sharia. If they have the unfortunate condition of studying under such a such teachers, then they end up already starting and critiquing, attacking, and criticizing, contradicting the Salaf, and that's a shame for them, unfortunately. Just to briefly, next week, inshallah, we're going to go through like historical sort of. I'm not going to go through this. They're going to go through this slide next week, inshallah, ta'ala, but just briefly, traditions within fiqh school, like broader traditions. So you got the Ahlul Hadith or the traditionalists. You got the Ahlul Ra'i, the rationalists, or principalists, right? Depends how you translate, I guess. The Zahiriyya or the literalists, right? And the features of each of these. And then, of course, the Aqliyya or the modern followers of personal opinion, if you can put it that way. They cover in many layers of the first three are legitimate schools of the Ahlus Sunnah historically. The last one is a school, but it's discredited. And it's basically due to colonialism, due to inferiority complex, due to not having a deep understanding of the Sharia itself. A view is formed based on when you disregard the Salaf and a 1300-year tradition before that, because it only occurred in the last 100 years. Then you'll end up with something, but it's not every, remember this rule always, not every effort is accepted by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. That effort that resembles the effort of Sahaba radiallahu anhum and Tabi'een, the Khairul Qurun, Allah has given Qabul to, and that will remain. And if you try to contradict them and try to think, that's why I mentioned Mawlana Shaykh Al-Thani rahimahullah is saying that in tafsir, you can explore. The wonders of the Quran will come out on the ulama that spend their time on the Quran. But at the same time, the idea that they contradict the Salaf and all the Salaf totally go against them, that's unacceptable. May Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala give us understanding to say on the proper understanding of deen through and through, inshallah, in all our affairs. Barakallahu feekum. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.